to the Rockman Show. It's time for Rockman to give his opinions, his views, and his thoughts on life and rock. So grab a beer, buckle in, and get ready to rock!
Rock by Von Groove. I hadn't listened to Von Groove in forever, man. I can't even tell you the last time I listened to that band. And they were one of those bands that I kind of got into during the, I guess, the grunge period-ish. And going into the early 2000s, they were like big in Europe and stuff like that. And just happened to see that they had a new song out, Born to Rock. There were so many songs about rocking, and we lived to rock, and we came to rock, and all that stuff. There's a bunch of rock songs. But I like this one. It had a really cool, like, catchy melody, catchy chorus, and it kind of brings you back to the old days. Like, when you're, like, yeah, fist in the air, your head banging, and you sing-along songs. The art of the sing-along song is kind of gone a little bit. I mean, there's songs you can sing and there's songs you can sing to, don't get me wrong. But that big arena rock chorus, those are kind of a thing of the past. You do get them. And at the interview of the show, another interview, people, I'm not shitting you. I've turned over a new leaf. I figured you get 30 minutes of me and then you get 30 minutes of a guy that does it and makes the music we love. Trying to do it every week, but it doesn't always work out, but we're going to do our best. Got a full palette. We got a lot of people coming your way. But anyway, I was listening to this Born to Rock song. And I'm like, what's my other favorite song about rocking? And there's this band, Canadian band from back in the day, late 80s, didn't really make a mark on the U.S. market. I'm not sure how big they were in Canada, but I really dug them. And I wanted to see them in college. So I'm going to go back to 1987, 1988, something like that, before I turned 21. So what did it have to be? It had to be 87. And my roommate at the time, a guy you've heard on this show a lot, a guy named Lee, he saw him, the motherfucker. You lucky bastard, Lee. He heard me playing their fucking vinyl in our dorm room so much. He's like, oh shit, I might go check them out. They got good drum. They have good guitar players and good melodies. The band's called Brighton Rock. And they came to rock. Let's do it. piece of bright rock brings me back. Brings me back to the day. I really like those old songs, and I mean, as cheesy as they are about singing about how we're gonna rock and all that jazz, I mean, it's cool. I mean, they're catchy songs. It doesn't hurt if you got a great guitar player too, but you gotta have a great vocalist, and you have to have this strong chorus. And that's what a lot of these 80s bands had, and there are bands that are still doing it now, but it's not like it was back in the day. I mean, I don't want to say hair metal, Bright Rock, yeah, kind of a hair metal thing. You look at the cover, you're like, oh, they had the hair, and it's all teased to the moon, and all that stuff. But there was a band, another one, but they were heavy, at least on one record, the first record. They came out heavy, guns blazing. And actually, my brother got me into them. And I gotta say, man, this record, their first record was so good. And then, you know, we've talked about on the show before. You get that great record, and then what happens? Record company's like, well, I think you could probably tone it down a little bit because it's too heavy for the people. They don't want to hear that. I think they do. And that's why you kill these bands. You know, I forget, it was like Top Gun or something like that. And King Cobra had their Iron Eagle. They had their song Iron Eagle, which was kind of the death nail in their coffin. Yeah, they had a hit, kind of, but they were done. But other bands that, you know, like Rough Cut, Icon, those first records they put out, and I've talked about it ad nauseum for the last 20 years. Record companies came in and said, no, this is not what you want to do. We need to put more syrup on it. We need to make it more bubblegum. You need to be more family friendly. Write songs like that. This edge, nobody wants that. It's too scary. And maybe the PMRC had something to do with that. I don't know. I never thought about that. Maybe I'm on to something. I don't know. But I mentioned Icon. They had a song. And then we're going to leave the rock and roll topic. Or in music or whatever. We're still talking rock. That's what we do here. How about a little bit of Rock and Roll Maniac off the self-titled debut record from Icon? Let's do it. Forget about it. So good. The second one was okay, just a little too polished for me, and then they changed singers, and they did that record, I think it was Right Between the Eyes, which had some good stuff on it too, but still a little polished. Not bad, not great, whatever. But anyway, let's move on. We've talked about the rock and the music and all that stuff for a bit now, so I want to talk about some live shows. I've seen a couple live shows since we last spoke. I saw Opeth and Catatonia here in Houston. Good show. Opeth always delivers, always sounds great, and it was kind of interesting. Not sure if you guys have seen them on this past tour. But a lot of people, one of the guys I went to the show with, he's like, wow, I was kind of wondering if Michael Akerfeld was lip syncing. I was like, what? He goes, no, it's kind of weird because how he would go into the mic singing clean and then go with the growl and he would back up. And I'm like, oh, dude, I kind of almost started breathing as he was going into the mic singing the growly stuff. Very interesting because, holy shit, man. I just don't get it how these vocalists can go from the clean to the growl so easily. It was so interesting when I talked to John with Crystal Lake last week, and he was talking about, hey, I kind of like doing the clean thing, but it's not a problem doing either one. So you wonder how they're going to shred their voice. You know, doing the growl thing, unless you're, I've heard if you use your diaphragm, then you could do the growl. It doesn't really affect your voice. So it's a singing technique that has really prevailed over the last, 20, 30 years now. It's a thing. Especially going from clean to growl and all that jazz. Opeth being one of the best. I tell you what, I guess I saw them, so we should play something from Opeth. Let's just play something DC. Let's do it. Opeth there. Oh man, that one's called Harvest. I really dig that, man. I miss some of that Opeth. I hadn't listened to it in a while, and actually it was kind of one of those concerts where you're like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna go. I'd seen them several times, and every time I've seen them, they're really good, but I'm like, I don't know, it was hard to move the needle on that one. I'm scared I'm getting old. And I'm like, oh, do I really want to be somewhere for 4 hours on my feet and watching a show? Unless it's a band I just fucking love, man. But I gotta say, the older I get, the more I like a seat. You guys can laugh and make fun. That's fine. I don't care. Really don't care. I do love live music, and I will continue to see live music until probably the day I die. But I am more choosy. And a lot of it is because these ticket prices are out of control, which we've talked about. But this one was kind of reasonable. I think it was like $60. And I mean, for Opeth and Catatonia, which I've never seen Catatonia, and I'm a fan, not a huge fan, but I like their stuff, the stuff I've heard. Do I own a record? No. Do I like them? Yes. I mean, they're cool. I mean, I thought they were okay. It was funny, we met up with some friends prior to the show, and one of my buddies was like, I'm not even going. I'm like, well, why are you not going to see Catatonia? He goes, they're so boring. I saw them at a metal fest. I was falling asleep. I'm like, they can't be that fucking bad. I saw them. They were good. I mean, am I going to go see them and stay in the line and pay a lot of money to go see them again? No way. If they're on a bill with a band I really want to see, sure, why not? But I'm not going out of my way. And not to knock Catatonia, it's just, are they one of my favorite bands? Not really. Opeth? I don't know. I haven't followed them like I did, say, 5-10 years ago. And maybe that's why it didn't move the needle, but I had a group of friends going. They're like, dude, you should go. It'll be fun. So I went. And $60, not a bad deal. And we had a great time. We had a great time. And it was a good show. I was like, after it was all over, I'm like, you know what? I'm glad I went. It was very cool. So the next show I saw was here this past week. I was in Canada on business. And I was like, huh, who's in town? Holy shit. One of my bands I really dig, and I'm like, that's a show I want to see. So my band Big Wreck was playing. I saw them a few years ago in Houston, and fuck, they killed. Ian Thornley is such an underrated guitar player. I mean, guys, check out their catalog. If you like what I'm about to play, check out more of their stuff. Ian is a fucking monster on the guitar and a great showman and has great vocals. If you like Soundgarden, if you like Chris Cornell's voice, he's kind of got that sound in his voice, but with more of a hard rock edge. It's not grunge or anything like that. So don't be afraid. If you don't like grunge, I'm not a big fan of grunge. I did like Soundgarden to an extent, to a certain time period. But fucking A, they killed. I'll tell you what, let's play a song and I'll tell you a little bit about the show. This one's called Bombs Away. Let's do it. Big Wreck on the show before, and I have advocated to say how badass they are. They really kill, man. Such a great band, man. So if you do have time and you like what you heard, check them out. They're coming to your town. Get ready for a good energetic rock show. They fucking kill. And if you're a guitar nut like me, watch Ian Thornley fucking rip like a motherfucker live. Can't say enough. They played so well, man. My biggest complaint is they were the opener to a band called Live. You probably know Live from back in the day. John, what are you playing?
It's called Lightning Crashes.
Lightning Crashes. Lightning crashed down on an arena when they hit the stage, and not in a good way. Oh my God, what a fucking boring act to see live. Holy, they should call themselves dead. Because they fucking put the audience to sleep, I tell you. And it's so funny, we ran into some friends in the hallway. They're like, dude, live's coming on soon, man. I'm like, okay. They're a buzz rock band from the 90s, and I heard a couple songs here and there, and I know the one playing underneath me, Lightning Crashes, but I didn't really know that many songs. And it was so funny, the singer guy kept on saying, hey, we're going back in a time warp to 1992. And every time they did, it was boring as fuck. My friend and I were like making fun, and it was so funny. You're like, you're gonna know this one. And then no one knew the song, but maybe 10 people. I will give them this, it was crowded. But I went into it, neither was my friend that I was with, and he was not a fan. Before he went to the show, he didn't really know either band that well. He knew one or two Big Rex songs, and he knew, you know, the hits from live, whatever they are. Lightning Crashes, I guess, being one. But oh my God, it was so douchey, and the singer guy was just annoying. Hey, I'm gonna put on my cowboy shirt and cowboy hat because I'm in Calgary. Enough with that shit. I don't need to see that. I don't need to see artists come out and wear the fucking jersey of the baseball team or the football team or the basketball team or whatever. Just wear your stage clothes. You're not going to get more applause from me if you support my team. I don't really give a fuck. I came to see you play music. But if you're going to wear a cowboy hat for half the fucking show in this cowboy shirt, fuck off. I don't want to see that. This is a rock show, not a country show. I don't need to see that. I don't know. That said, they were just boring. And I saw a lot of people in the crowd that really weren't into it either. But apparently, I mean, the fucking thing sold out. And it was crowded. It was crowded for Big Rec. And I gotta see what happened for... I'm all over the place with this thing. So anyway, we get in, we get a beer. My buddy and I pregame before the show, grab a little dinner, and then we get to the venue. We get about 15 minutes before Big Rec comes on. Stand in line for beer. The beer lines were long, but I gotta give it to the Canadians, man. They had people in and out of that line, unlike in the U.S. or the venues I go to. Not sure if there are better venues in the U.S. that I don't attend for beer lines. But, I will say they fucking moved. And I will say the fucking beer was cheaper. Not because it was in Canadian dollars, but a pint of beer was like 12 Canadian, which is like 10 U.S. In a lot of arenas in the U.S., it's like 17 bucks a beer. Fuck that, man. And it's usually shit beer. And I'm not going to say the Canadians did much better than other arenas in the U.S. as far as beer selection. It's your standard shit. For them, for Canada. They have this one crap brewery, I forget, like Granville Isle or something like that. They had a lager and a hazy. The hazy was okay, but the lager was shit. Wasn't a fan of either. So anyway, we get our beers, we get in there, and we probably have... I would say 5 minutes before Big Rec comes on, and we're a ways back. It's pretty crowded. And then the lights go down, and Big Rec kicks into The Oaf, a really great song. And as soon as they kick into it, probably three or four bars into it, the lady in front of us decides to pass out. She falls flat on the fucking floor. And call me a dick. I mean, I'm okay with it. If you want to do it, I'm totally fine. But I was annoyed. I'm like, you shouldn't have got so fucked up to where now I can't enjoy the show because you're passed out in front of me. It was unbelievable. So all these people are like all concerned. I'm like, can you get her out of the way so I can see the show and enjoy it and rock out? We paid a lot of money for these fucking tickets. So the asshole I am, I nudge my buddy. It's like, hey, there's a spot over there. She's attended to. There's nothing you and I can do for her. She's fucked up out of her mind because she drank too much. Fucking idiot. It was like, I think 8 o'clock at night. And she is fucking blitzed out of her fucking mind already. And I think that lady was like 60 years old or something. I was like, I'm not far from that, but I can control my liquor. Holy shit. Luckily, like I said, we moved a couple areas down and we're able to enjoy the show. And of course, I have the tallest motherfucker in front of me as always. So I took some video. If you guys follow me on Instagram, RTR Ragman, you see some of my video shots and some of my pics, but they're from like the top of my arm length, trying to get over that fucker's head. Why do tall people exist? And why there should be sections in arenas where it says, okay, if you're over 6 foot tall, you have to stand in back. Hey, we'll give you a discounted ticket. But the short fucks like me, we get preference because we're short. We want to see. The tall fuckers, I mean, those fuckers are like 7 foot tall. I'm like, where do they grow you? Fucking get out of the way. I want to see the show. I paid a lot of money. I'm sure you did too, but you're so fucking tall, you can see over everyone. Oh my God. All this bitching, I'm thirsty, Mr. G. Something. I'm not sure what that is, but you're right.
I'm pretty good. I'm okay for now.
All right, good. Enough of you. All right, let's get into this beer. I'm excited. I got me some new booty from Boston. Chowder, lobster, monster. I've got my buddy. I got a connection in Boston now. Bringing me beer from that beautiful state of Massachusetts. All my friends in Massachusetts, how you doing? Horns up over there. So today, we got the Treehouse. One of the best beers in Boston area. And this one's called the Urban. A tribute. Oh, there's too much to talk about on this. It's an IPA, 7.1%. I'm trying to see if it shows what's in this bad boy. But there's a whole story, but it's in small writing. And as you know, I can't read that well anymore. So I'm just going to go off the appearance and the aroma. And the taste, of course. So looking at this bad boy, looks like pineapple juice. As you can guess, it's a hazy. That's what I like over here. So that's what I do. But it's a beautiful beer. You'll see in my post. It looks, again, really golden in color. Kind of yellow, kind of pineapple juicy. There's a head on it. It is staying there. There's not a lot of retention on the glass. It's like the head's like, I'm going to stick to myself here. I'm not moving around much. So let me go for an aroma check. Oh, it smells great. Oh, this fucker's fresh. I can tell it. I smell pineapple too, which is interesting as well. So let me clink myself. Oh, wow. That's yummy. There is that pineapple, and there's like a earthy bitterness at the end. That's nice. One more drink. John hit the horns.
Done and done.
Wow, this one's a little bit dank too. Holy shit. What a great beer. It deserved the horns is all I'm saying. I tell you what, before we jump into our last topic of the night before our interview, let's play some new music. It's a band called The Quill. And this one's called Dark City. Let's do it. I don't know much about The Quill. Looks like they're from Sweden. And they got that good kind of classic rock sound. They look like older guys in the video. No knock against that. I mean, I liked it. It's just kind of a classic, cool little riff that drives the song. I dug it. Hope you did as well. Tonight, I've got a great interview for you coming up right after this last segment. With a legend, Robin McCauley. He's in a band called Black Swan right now, and they have a brand new record called Paralyzed. It was just released last week. Oh my goodness. I gotta say, this record kills. It's right now, it's probably my favorite record of the year. I mean, it's early. We're only in March here, but there's a lot of great songs on this record. And what a great band, how they developed over the three records they've done now. So you're going to hear a lot, and you're going to hear a lot from Robin here shortly. Before we jump into the interview, I wanted to mention just a quick story. And it's about Alex Van Halen. So there's so much going on about Van Halen over the last several months, where Alex is like, hey, there's a Van Halen record. It's basically recorded. It's drums, bass, guitars. We need a singer. The curious thing to me is he's enlisted Steve Lukather, who's an amazing guitar player, as we all know, to, I guess, help him sift through it. Or I'm not sure if Lukather comes in and plays some rhythm stuff underneath some of Eddie's solos. I'm not sure what Lukather's real part in this project is, and I'm not complaining because the guy's so talented, but it's just kind of a weird scenario. I know him and Eddie were friends and all that jazz, but where does he fit into this puzzle? What's he doing with this record? And maybe he's going to produce it. I don't know. But the big controversy right now is who's going to be the singer. We all know that Dave really can't do it anymore. He's out there touring, but his tour footage looks like shit and sounds like shit. He's a mockery of himself. It's sad to see because he was such an icon back in the day. But now it's just kind of a joke. It's like he should retire. Like some of these other bands are retiring. And no offense, you know, you don't have to go away all the way, but dude, you can't sing anymore. You got this backing band that's, you know, basically doing all the vocals for you, and then you're like singing so out of key everywhere else. Great frontman. He still brings it for a 70-something-year-old guy, but again, he's just, it's goofy now. It's really goofy. So I guess a big controversy would be over, you know, why not bring back Sammy? But ever since Sammy wrote his book, he pretty much burnt that bridge with the Van Halen brothers, even though he says at the end of Eddie's life, they mended the fence. I'm guessing he never mended the fence with Alex. And there wasn't really a lot of dirt on Alex in the book going on memory. It's been a few years since I read it. But, yeah, it was kind of a pissing match there. That said, next week you get Genghis and Ragman. We're back. We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about another band that we talked about our last show that we said somebody couldn't be replaced. And what happened this week? He got replaced. Unbelievable. So we're going to talk about that next show. So guys, again, a great interview with the legend Robin McCauley coming up right now. But before I let you go, I want to thank you for listening every week. Thank you for your support, and thank you for your comments when you send them. But before I let you go, I'm going to give you one big hose.
Hi, everyone. This is Robin McCauley from Black Swan, and you are listening to The Rackman Show. Horns up.
Guys, you're on live. Motto We Motto with Ragman and a vocal legend. And I have been blessed and lucky enough to talk to this man, I think, three or four times over the years. Last time we talked was a year ago on Soulbound. Do you know who it is yet? Well, if you don't, it's Robin McCauley. Robin, welcome back to the Ragman Show.
Time flies. It's a pleasure, Alan. Thank you so much.
Good to see you again, my friend. First off, I want to congratulate you on the new Black Swan, Paralyzed. Holy shit, my friend. This album is, I know it's early in the year, I'm not saying this because we're talking, it's my favorite album so far, brother. Congratulations. It's freaking amazing.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. So hopefully the listeners like it as much as we put the work into it. Yeah, number three, hard to believe. But there you have it. We're pretty excited about it.
What do you think the major difference between this and Generation Mind is?
Oy! I think, to be honest, Rev and Jeff and myself have really established that sort of cohesiveness in our songwriting. We don't dwell on it a great deal. Having said that, we're very connected to good, strong melodies, good hook lines. And yes, we're a sort of 80s rocker, so we're never going to get out of that ditch. So we try to make it powerful, melodic, and a little fresh, if that's even possible, especially with production and everything. Jeff is a master of that. And that's really the best that we can do, really.
Well, I gotta say, it seems like this album's more cohesive. Like, you guys have really grown, kind of like you were just saying, as you've written the upbeat on your third record, the more you work together, you're starting to get this chemistry, rather than four guys who knew each other, you never really did a lot in the past. It sounds like a band now. And
you're right. When it got put together, because the label doesn't with a lot of their acts and Frontiers is very much into the melodic rock. And when they suggested to Jeff to put a supergroup together, we were kind of going, really, guys? It's so cheesy, you know? And really, we weren't interested in that sort of a title. But we were interested in seeing what we could do together as a songwriting team. And honest to God, we had no idea when it came to Shake the World. We just wrote songs, and it turned out great. Yeah. And then we transitioned into Generation Mine, and I think the most we said was, what do you think we should do? Well, more of the same, and as long as it's good and we like it. And here we are, number three. And yeah, I think we're more comfortable with each other. And Reb is, man, I think he's on fire on this record.
He really is, man.
He is, just. I mean, I almost cringe when people go, oh my God, one of the most underrated guitar. I don't underrate him at all. I mean, look at his body of work for so long, at such an early age, writing those riffs that still stand up. And oh, yeah. and he, I think he's, you know, he's got the flash, he's got the speed, but he's got that big melody that comes out of the, he does all of the stuff, and then bam, out comes this melody at the end to bring it all together. And I love working and writing around that sort of format and structure. And he's really good at it.
Well, let me ask you this. When you guys start a new album, how's it work? Does like Reb send ideas, Jeff, yourself? How does that all come together? And do you record remotely or all in the same studio?
No, so here's how it works. Jeff and I live pretty close together here in LA. So that's easy trip to the studio for me. We work primarily out of Jeff's studio, if not exclusively out of Jeff's studio. Reb's in Pittsburgh, Matt's in Connecticut when he's home, and Reb will come out to Jeff and they'll start shredding, knock out 10, 11, 12, maybe 15 songs, and then they'll go, okay, and there'll be no lead breaks, it's just the basic format of the song. Jeff will program drums and that sort of stuff just to build a bass, and it'll land on my laptop and scare the crap out of me and go, have at it. And I'll work my demos here at home and start sending them back as I get them done. And they'll go, yeah, I like this part. I would love if you did this here or change that lyric there, that sort of stuff. So we're in pre-production mode as we're writing. And we find that there's very little pre-production when it comes to me arriving at Jeff's studio to start recording vocals. We'll just tweak a couple of things and go, off we go. And it's we've got it down. We kind of know what we all do, and there's not too much. Jeff has a great ear. Jeff will go, I really think we should change this part here, move this here, do that, blah, blah, blah. And he was, I would say he's 99.9% right when it comes to his arrangement, and Reb and I both feel the same. No discussion. We're happy with it because we map it out as we go, and we'll tweak it to where we go. Yeah, that makes it better. It's all about the songs for us, all about the melody. We don't waste anything in a song. We joke about our bridge sections in the songs. They're as strong as a chorus. They're as strong as a pre-chorus.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how we do it. We love to write like that, and we chuckle about it, and we have a great sense of humor with the whole thing, and I think that's what's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the first song I want to bring up is Death of Me. Mid-tempo, melodic rocker, crunchy guitar. I love the pre-chorus. It's so cool. And then there's one part, and call me crazy,
like
this melody vocal line that reminds me of Do Ya by ELO.
Oh.
I don't know if you know the part. And then I was going to mention that Reb's solo in that song is amazing. So after the first chorus, you do da 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 da. It reminds me of Do You Wop.
Oh, I see what you're saying, you know.
We'll be right back. I didn't know if that was a nod to ELO or not.
No, not even. When I was listening back down to it and not knowing where I should take it lyrically, you know, I went down to the City of Hope, you know, someone slapped the door in my face, you know, it's a common theme these days, you know. And Reb was playing that da-do-do, 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 and I'm thinking, do I just leave this for the guitars, you know? And then I started thinking, because of the lyrical content, of going, I can do anything long as the medicine's strong as can be. And it's basically being strung out. It's basically being homeless. It's basically giving it everything you've got and still wasn't enough. And no matter which direction you went, everybody went, nah, not for me, not for me, not for me. And it was basically rejection. And that's, I didn't even think of UFO or UFO, of ELO. I love UFO, by the way. I didn't even think about ELO, but now that you mention it, I suppose, my God, I'm a huge Jeff Lynne fan. Who doesn't like ELO?
You know? Exactly.
You know, if you like the Beatles, you love ELO because all of those arrangements, it's great. But that's a good point. Excellent point. I will tell you one song I paid homage to one band on a track called Shakedown.
Oh, I love that. That was my next song to bring up.
Right at the very end of the tag, it's sort of 40 years of Fiddleline at Thin Lizzy. And I heard because we titled it Shakedown, at the very, very end, I go, tonight there's going to be a shakedown.
So that's awesome.
A little bit of homage from Jailbreak from Lizzy. So that's the only thing I'm going to sort of say that I might have thought about.
Well, Shakedown's a great song. It kind of, I think you timed the record release a little early. This is like a summer, late spring, roll down the windows, crank it up. And Shakedown would be perfect for that. I just thought, I could think about myself riding in the car, windows down, cranking up Shakedown and just hauling ass down the highway.
Yeah, well, Reb, back to Reb. Reb loves to, you know, we need a balance on the record, which is why we leave it to Jeff to do the track listing, you know, thankfully. And Reb likes to shake up those riffs. He likes to get a little different feel. And when I heard Shakedown, purely from the musical point of view, I went, it was a kind of a Lizzy-esque thing for me. Not that we go down that road, but there was something about it, and so I followed suit. And I never know what they're going to send me, you know. Mm-hmm. I get inklings of it, and then I hear the whole thing together, and I'm totally intimidated, and I'm going, I have no idea what to do here, because I could send this back to these two guys who are so used to writing great stuff, and I'm going, really, dude? That's what you hear? So you never know which way it's going to go. And thankfully it works out now.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. Well, another song.
Can put it out. If the record lasts, if it has enough balls to ride the wave, maybe come summer, the label will stick it out as a summer hit.
Oh, there you go. That would be awesome. I can see
it. Send them a note, huh?
Yeah. Thanks, Ragman. We hope Frontiers.
Thanks, right. Yeah. Kudos to him. He gets the credit.
There you go. Well, another one just kicking my ass is Battered and Bruised. Mid-tempo. I love that killer riff. Then it goes into a different direction and kind of gets dark in some parts. The chorus is amazing. And Reb's solo in that song is like, wow.
Yeah.
Started running long before you could walk. I knew you'd fall soon.
thrilled about the title when I came in with it, and because it was like, eh. And then the more they listened to it, Reb was going, dude, where do you get this shit? And I went, I don't know, where do you get it, you know? I work around the guitars. I mean, obviously. And when I start working with it, sometimes I don't have a title. I don't have a book of words. I don't have a Bible of songs that I can go, oh, I'll use this lyric for this one. Because you can't do that. And I was telling somebody the other day, I mean, if you could look around here, it's a mess of just scribbled notes. And once I have a song finished, it goes into the trash can. My wife gives me hell. She goes, you should keep those notes. So did you, you know, I said, it's not like taking a math test. You know, show me how you built the formula. You know, yeah. I said, sorry, it's gone. You know, yeah. I cheated.
I cheated.
So I don't keep anything. I don't use unused lyrics for the next record somewhere. I just don't. I'm not that good. You know, I'll jot notes down in my phone, maybe titles in my phone, maybe just. But I don't have a copious amount of unused lyrics. So when we came to Battered and Bruised, I went, I think there was something I had done on Soulbound that I really liked. And I went, I like the way that went. I wonder if I could do something with this riff. And of course, when Reb starts to solo, and another point, he doesn't have, there's no solos on the music when I get it. He puts that in after the fact when he hears what I've done, and it's amazing how he compliments those melodies and those lyrics, and that's what puts the icing on the cake. And if Matt of course, Matt comes in with this thunder,
yeah,
he's awesome, you know. And this again, Matt's the last one to put the drums down. Can you believe that? You know, it's not.
Wow.
People go, oh, I don't understand how, you know, you lose the spontaneity when you're not in a room with the bass player and there's a magic. Well, of course there is. But I don't know too many bands since maybe even the 70s who managed to be in the same room together all at the same time. We're just doesn't work like that too much. You know, there's so much remote. But I don't think on this record or on all three records, Save Yourself, Shake the World, rather, Matt was in the studio. I think when it came to Generation Mind, he had moved out of L.A. back to Connecticut. We were in pandemic times. Stuff was...
Yeah.
People were getting away. And he remained there. So Matt gets the tracks when we put all the pieces together. Just needs the cheese, and then he brings the cheese. And he said he loves... He finds it really interesting working that way because now he hears the structure of the song and he goes, well, I know exactly what to do here. As opposed to maybe if he was in a room for pre-production, pre-recording with Jeff, slamming down the bottom end, only to listen to a mix and go, ah, I wish I'd play that fill and not that fill. And now he can go, ah, I can play both fills and see which one I like. And that's what he does. And I think he does he really brings the thunder. He does an awesome job.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So back to the question of where we find these sort of structures and lyrics and pre-chorus things, it just seems to flow. I would love to tell you exactly how it happens. It just happens.
Well, it's magical what you guys are doing, to be honest. I did want to bring up, and I'll be curious to see what you say about this, is like when Reb comes in, I saw a long time ago,
yeah,
Uyghur put out this video where it's him and Kip doing, I think, their fourth record or something like that, and Reb's just playing these riffs and riffs, and then one part, Kip's like, what? He's like, yeah. So when you guys get in the studio, I don't know how structured everything is. Is there a bit of jamming when you're all together? Like, yeah, Reb, we love that, Reb.
Well, when Jeff and Reb get together, Reb will, for the most part, bring the riffs in.
Okay.
He'll bring the riffs in, and he'll go, hey man, this is what I have, and he'll start running it down, and Jeff will start programming just to get a format, and then they'll start creating a structure of, that's too long, that needs to be shortened, love the riff, maybe repeat the riff there, don't use the riff again, just use it as an intro. Sounds like an intro, sounds more like a chorus, and it's just, that's how it gets played, and we start to chop it up and go, now it works.
Yeah.
And back to what I said earlier, and Reb will attest to this, if Jeff goes, you know what, I think this blah, blah, blah should be here, you know, like, they worked so well on Erase the Slate with Dokken and Tooth and Nail, and so they're used to each other.
Yeah.
And Reb is so good, he goes, I know, you're right, let's do it that way. And there's never a long conversation about, nah, I completely disagree. There really isn't anything like that. I come in sometimes with a chorus lyric that I don't want to change this because I think this is really good. Jeff, go, just this one piece, trust me. Just change that one little piece.
Oh, wow.
Then we'll change it and we'll go, why didn't I think of that? It's just, the variation on the theme, as it were. Again, all about the song. So the structure of it, they work together. They do a lot of woodshedding. And then create the format of the song. I hate to use that word format because it sounds like we're like, you know, writing by numbers. It's all feel. It's all feel. And Reb just has great riffs. And Jeff has such a great ear and he puts that thunderous bass underneath. And so many songs on the record, Jeff was playing these really cool parts that I was completely influenced by what he was playing.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't even listening to Reb. I'm going, ah, Pilsen, what? This is awesome. And he goes, wow, somebody listens to my bass for a change.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, when it came to, there's a track on there called I'm Ready. It was totally influenced by Jeff's bass playing of what he was doing. And I'm going, ah, my God, this is breaking my heart. Which is why I went down that sort of rabbit hole of lyrics that I wrote for it. Yeah, there's a couple of odd timings in there, and I went, this is cool. And then when I put it down on a demo and I sent it back, I went, oh, they could hate this. It might be too much doom and gloom here, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's like a big confessional, gather all your friends, and I am so sorry for all the shit I gave you guys. But anyway, thank you. Forgive me. I'm going to leave now. And that's really what the song was. It was like,
yeah.
I have no idea where my headspace was.
Mm-hmm.
But what came out was a gorgeous melody and a great sentiment. And Reb heard it and he goes, oh, dude, just change that note there and just this one here. And this is killer. Yeah. And it really, it's all the music first. Music comes in first. Yeah.
Well, I, based on what you just said about how things twist and turn within some of the songs, it's part of the reason it really captures my ear when I'm listening to a lot of these songs. So I want to bring back Death of Me. There's this one area or section where you're singing a melody right before the solo, and it changes. I mean, it's so melodic. It's ear candy for me. It's hard for me to explain what I'm saying, but I love how there's different. It's not just a cookie cutter formula song. There's all these different sections. You're like, well, I love that section. I love that section. And especially in Death of Me, that one section where you're singing very melodic right before the solo starts, I was like, oh, I want more. I want more. It's so
good.
Yeah,
well, again, we have a lot of little side jokes within the band, especially with me and Jeff when I come in to do vocals. And Jeff will go, how come none of these bridges are just a bunch of shit? We just write great bridges. He goes, almost like the bridge better than I do the chorus. And then he go, but the pre-chorus is pretty cool. And he goes, but if you take one away, you don't have the other. So it all makes sense. And I love diversity in melodies. I just, I love verses that are sort of boom, out of here, and then that pre-chorus starts to bring it in slowly, and bam, you hit that chorus. You know, I remember, not to compare apples and oranges, I remember back with Pyromania and Hysteria with the Mutt Lange writing for Leopard. The verses were choruses with Leopard stuff. Throw Nothing Away, big, bold, pompous choruses, 10,000 vocals on there, you know, a Mutt Lange trait, bigger is better, you know. And I used to listen to that stuff and I'm going, God, I love the structures. I love how this guy just goes, he wastes not a note in a song. And I'm no Mutt Lange, that's for sure. But I've listened a lot, and I've brought a lot of Motown writing with me over the years. I love Motown. Motown is as strong today as it was when I first listened to it. The structure of those lyrics, those hook lines, those melodies that just... Give me a Four Tops record or a Temptations record, and I'll put it on repeat, because there's nothing that you throw away. They're just so well orchestrated. They all mean something. And back to your point, it's I come out of a pre-chorus and I'm going, I'm not ready for that chorus just yet. I have more.
Nice.
And, you know, there's only so many bars in a song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And also to your point, if you really like a section and you I want to hear more of it, that's the key.
Yeah.
That's the key. Play it again, put it on repeat.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one of the last songs I want to bring up, and back to you, what you said about track listing, what Jeff did. I think you did an amazing job. I love how the record flows, and that's huge for me. If it's this fast, slow, medium, I get bored, but I love the flow of the record, and I love how you close the record with what the future holds. Jeff's got the mean bass line. There's a section where he trades off with Reb some, and... It's funny, I wrote myself a note here. I love the great pre-chorus. That's my favorite part of the song.
He loved the title, Jeff. And then right at the end, I hadn't thought about anything particular for the end except just a repeat chorus. And then he goes, what do you think of this? And then he, right on the end, he has, tell me what the future, tell me what the... And I went, because Jeff is a huge Beatles fan. He's a huge George Martin fan. So he loves these little offset melodies, and he stuck that as my favorite part of the song. It's a really powerful, great closer.
I agree.
It's a great closer. Lyrically, I wish we all knew what the future. Well, maybe we don't. Maybe not. Maybe I don't need to know what's going on. You know, Then I'd find out what happened to my hair, if I can keep it or not.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go. Well, it's interesting because Lunar New Year is here for the Asian community, and my girlfriend's Vietnamese. So we went to temple on Tuesday.
Oh,
and there was a monk reading kind of like a fortune deal. You do this thing where you shake these sticks and you pick a number. You go to a mailbox and he tells you what goes on. And it was interesting to kind of get your future. So I've been messing with hers because she says, I'm going to be rich. This is going to be great. I'm going to be successful. I'm like, I bust her balls about it yesterday. And she goes, babe, it's just kind of a fun thing to do. Don't take it too seriously.
There you are, Seth, filling out applications for Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I get through the record and I keep hitting repeat. It's, I don't want it to end. Every song is so good, so well structured, so much ear candy on this thing. I'm not kidding. I do want to bring up, you've done a couple videos for Paralyzed and If I Was King. I guess If I Was King, I really like that. It's got some of the AI stuff going on and stuff like that. But when you guys do a video shoot, I'm sure it's hard for all of you guys to be in the room at one time. So do you shoot them in the same day?
On the same day, because you're right, logistically, the guys coming in, it took a couple or 3 months just to get to schedule that one. I can tell you exactly the date was October 18th when we shot both those videos, and we were planning that for at least 2 or 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Because I was in Europe, Reb was out somewhere, Jeff was going, I'm just not going to be around. It's the same as when I start recording vocals. I have to be ready because I'll get an email. Jeff will send me an email going, I'm going to be home for 3 days. How much do you think we can get done?
Oh, wow.
And are you at home anyway for us to do that?
Uh-huh.
And so same for the video. So we knocked those two out in the same day, and we had a blast. We had a blast. We start early. We start early. Everything's mapped out. Has to be. No wasting time. We know what we're going to do when we get in there. Apart from little things, the video director will come up with on the fly, that maybe look good on paper, didn't work in the room. And he goes, oh, there's a much better angle than this here that I wasn't aware of. And that's just production stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we knocked out two in the same day.
And are you kind of like mesmerized when you see the finished product. Like, well, I had no idea you're going to do this or that. You're in the king's chair, and if I was king,
let me tell you something for nothing. I hate cameras.
Oh, really?
I don't like photo shoots. I don't like video shoots. I love the mayhem that's going on around it. I love cables and equipment, and I love that. I could stand a while. I could be in a TV studio all day and be like a kid in a toy shop. I love the mayhem. I love to see stuff moving around and the setup. For me to get up in front, it's like, going, what do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do? Like, it's, you know, somebody said, and this will hopefully give you a better idea. Somebody made a comment after seeing Paralyzed. And in the middle of the shoot, I'm going, I have no idea what to do here. You know, it's like, get in the camera's face for the whole song, blah, blah, blah. You know, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And then I remember in the middle of the chorus, I just suddenly, for no reason, no planning, I just went, I held perfectly still as a joke. Uh-huh. And suddenly the director's going, that was cool. Do that again. Paralyzed. Paralyzed, right? Yeah. Right on cue. And somebody goes, dude, what's with the Tin Man?
The Tin Man.
But point here is, you see how people see things and hear things and immediately go off on a tangent, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going, Tin Man? Tin Man, what are you... And I'm going, oh, dude, really? You know, but you see my point? So, you know, sometimes you think something's silly. Sometimes you think something is cool. And somebody will see something else. And it's the same with lyrics. It's all down to interpretation most of the time. What you get out of it may not be what Joe Blow gets out of it. What you see on screen was probably not part of the big picture, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And that's when it came out and you go, or cool. You know, we just stumbled across that chair for If I Was King, for example. And director had no idea it was going to be on set in the day. And he goes, I have a great idea for the chair. And I went, what chair? And I went, oh, God, Game of Thrones. And it was ivy and all sorts of stuff. And he goes, we won't see half of that. It'll be all good. When we get in there, we'd blow the smoke and just sit in the chair and make some moves. I'm going, oh, God. You know, because you start thinking, oh, no, this could be really bad. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, what you don't use ends up on the cutting room floor, you know.
Right.
So there is that. So you shoot it anyway and you leave it in the lap of the gods. You know, if I was king, I could do whatever I want.
There you go. Well, crazy question. I pretty much know the answer, but maybe there's hope. Have you guys thought about trying to do any kind of live dates at maybe a Frontiers Festival or Monster Rock Cruise or something like that?
It is heavy in the conversation for some time now. There is an event from the label. I actually leave for Italy on Monday.
Oh, nice.
For the Frontiers label 30th anniversary. I'll also be performing at the show. And... there is a LA version or US version of that coming towards the end of the year. And Black Swan have been told, I don't care where you guys are, you have to be there for it.
Oh, wow.
So that is under conversation right now. And my big weekend wish would be have the promoters pick up, listen to this record and go, this is cool. We have three records now. And give us a slot on a festival. I think that's the perfect platform to introduce Black Swan. A lot of people, same place, same time. Let's do this. Let's do a half a dozen festivals. And I think it would be just awesome way to introduce the band. I think it would be the perfect way. So we're working on that too.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing.
And I think that would be better than getting into a, you know, a van and going, doing a club show.
I agree.
Because you're just not going to You're not going to achieve anything. Festival, we're a virtually unknown band, but in the thick of it, and we bring in another. Already talking about bringing in another guitarist because we need somebody else for all those parts.
Yeah,
Matt's a great singer. Not a lot of people know that. Jeff's a great singer. Reb's a great singer. And we'd bring in a guitar player who we already have an idea, who would also play keys. Great guitar player, great singer. So we would be able to reproduce these records just like you hear it.
And that would be awesome.
That's the goal. Yeah.
Well, Robin, before we let you go today, is there something you want to tell the fans out there?
Fans, we love you. Anybody that knows Black Swan, thank you so much for your support. Spread the word. You will find us up on YouTube. You will find us all on our official Facebook pages, on Instagram. And if you go directly to Frontiers Music, SRL, if you are so kind and would love to pre-order a record, that's where you get all the information, or on any of our individual Facebook pages, Instagram. Most of the links are attached on there as well. February 27th, we drop Paralyzed officially. We hope you like it. Give us a thumbs up, step and repeat, share it, and thank you. I really appreciate it. We can't do it without you guys. So hope you love the music. We love you guys, and thank you.
Well, Robin, I want to thank you for coming on the Rag Band Show, and I'm going to say what Robin has said. Grab Black Swan's brand new record, Paralyzed, out on February 27th on Frontiers. It is amazing. As of now, it's my favorite record of the year. But guys, before we let you go, we're going to do something very special. Horns up!